From Harrisburg to Erie, Clearfield to Camp Hill, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, no blue wave nationwide, but one did sweep over southeastern Pennsylvania, where Democrats picked up congressional seats and ousted over a dozen incumbent Republican state House and state Senate members. Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania is here with details. Pennsylvania has 500 school districts, and there is constant talk of mergers and consolidations, but that rarely happens. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi explore why on this week's Allegheny Institute Report. And a number of lawmakers are working to improve Pennsylvania's business climate. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity talks about who they are and what they are doing on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. International travel from the Pittsburgh International Airport has risen over the past 2 years, but a new report from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in Pittsburgh suggests this may be more a result of government subsidies to airlines than any upsurge in consumer demand. In July of this year, the airport announced a $3 million subsidy to British Airways to begin nonstop flights from the Steel City to London's Heathrow Airport. That impacted Delta Airlines, which suffered from the subsidized competition and resulted in it canceling its flights to Paris. The Allegheny Institute observed that, quote, it is axiomatic that when subsidies are given to induce new airlines to offer flights out of PIT to specific destinations, there will be consequences to existing carriers, end quote. Delta pointedly referenced increased international capacity, in other words, the new subsidized flights to London, as the prime reason for canceling its service. Jake Hauk of the Allegheny Institute concluded that if there is a true demand for more international flights, the airlines themselves will increase that supply without the need for government subsidies. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier gathering of public policy conservatives each year here in the Keystone State. The conference is held in the spring, with the 2019 conference slated for April 5th and 6th at the Radisson Penn-Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. Conference organizers this past week announced that Wall Street Journal journalist and best-selling author Kimberly Strassel will be the featured speaker at next year's event. She is author of the book, The Intimidation Game, How the Left is Silencing Free Speech. Kim Strassel is also a frequent guest commentator on the Sunday morning political shows. Information on the conference is available at paleadershipconference.org. And there was just one referendum on last week's general election ballot, and that was in Allegheny County, where voters were asked to approve a quarter mil increase in property taxes, purportedly to provide additional funding to preschool and meals for children. Voters rejected the proposed property tax increase, 52-48%. It should be noted such programs are already funded by taxpayer dollars through various county and city agencies. Supporters said the fund would provide more services to needy children. Opponents said it was an unnecessary slush fund because government already provides such programs. Voters agreed. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court re-gerrymandered the state's congressional districts last winter, and as a result, Democrats picked up a number of congressional seats on their way to reclaiming control of the House of Representatives. Here to talk about that, statewide results, and the dent put into GOP majorities in the state legislature is Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. Leo, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Leo, it was an election day with a lot of different results in a lot of different areas, some good, some bad, as you have in these off-year elections or midterm elections, I think is probably a better term. So let's start out with the federal races and Pennsylvania's U.S. Senate seat. Republicans, of course, nationwide expanded their majority in the United States Senate. Pennsylvania, however, did not contribute to that.
They did not. Unfortunately, Representative Lou Barletta, his Senate campaign really was underwhelming. in terms of both fundraising and the amount of activity that the campaign undertook.
Didn't end well. Of course, in all fairness, he was running against Robert P. Casey Jr., Casey name legendary in Pennsylvania, more because of his dad, obviously, than because of the senator, but continued to work for him. So that was a landslide victory for the Democrats. That brings us to Pennsylvania's 18 seats in the U.S. Congress. This was an election year unlike any other election year because of the Supreme Court. For those who may not have heard about it, and if they've been listening to the show, they've heard about it a lot. What made this so unusual from a congressional point of view?
From a congressional point of view, the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court decided to redistrict and did not, by any definition of the term, submit districts that were contiguous or compact. They engaged in the same sort of gerrymandering that they had found the state House and Senate guilty of.
And as a result of this re-gerrymandered map, then we had all the congressional districts in Pennsylvania change, which normally only happens every 10 years after the census. Republicans had a rather lopsided majority in the state's congressional delegation. That is now...
that's gone. The Democrats ended up flipping 4 seats from Republican to Democrat. It actually would have been 5, but in a special election earlier this year, Connor Lamb, a Democrat, took a Republican seat and he managed to keep that Republican seat in the general election.
He got gerrymandered back into a district with Congressman Keith Rothfuss. So that was our only incumbent on incumbent race, and Connor Lamb prevailed. So now we have a 9-9 split. Where did the Democrats have their pickups outside of the seat in Allegheny County with Connor Lamb?
It was all in the southeast. It was in the counties surrounding the Philadelphia area. So, I mean, with one exception, it's Democrats down there outside of Bucks County.
Congressman Fitzpatrick in Bucks County managed to hold on in the southeast. There were a couple of hotly contested races in other parts of the state, in the mid-state, Scott Perry, Congressman Mike Kelly up in the Erie Butler County area, the northwestern part of the state. Those two districts, Democrats made a real strong run but came up short.
In some of the races that our political action committee was involved with, when we modeled what we thought turnout would be, the numbers that actually came out were double what we were expecting.
Yes, turnout was extraordinarily high for a midterm, almost presidential level around Pennsylvania. There was a lot of interest this year. Let's talk now about the state races. Obviously, Governor Tom Wolf secured re-election last Tuesday. He did this in landslide fashion. Scott Wagner was the Republican candidate, and what happened there that Tom Wolf, who really hasn't established much of a record, and that he has is ultra-liberal. He's been named the most liberal governor in America by numerous publications. That's not Pennsylvania, so why does he end up winning by a landslide?
Part of what gave him momentum going into this general election was the lack of legislation that was put on his desk by the House and the Senate that he would have been forced to veto. The failure for us to kind of draw clear distinctions goes to the General Assembly, because the Republicans did not use the majorities that they had in both chambers to pass legislation that would have put Tom Wolf on the spot. So that's one issue. The other issue is that a lot of the members of the business community, for a variety of reasons in Pennsylvania, went into a defensive position and did not support Scott Wagner's gubernatorial campaign. They just did not open up their checkbooks. And that, when you're running a statewide race, is a huge problem.
You also had the fact that Scott Wagner went through a hotly contested primary, and his primary opponent, Paul Mango, ran one of the most nastily negative campaigns I think that I've seen in a long time in Pennsylvania. Wagner never seemed to recover from that.
Yeah, he didn't seem to recover from that. And I think part of that goes to his campaign consultants were in way over their head. Mm-hmm. They were not prepared to run the type of statewide race going into the general election that this turned into.
We are talking with Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. We're talking about all those election results. And that brings us to the Pennsylvania General Assembly. Obviously, we have the state Senate and the state House. Going into this election, Republicans were at an historic high, 121 seats in the state House, a veto-proof majority of 35 out of 50 in the state Senate. So the pendulum, Leo, had swung pretty far in the Republican direction here. And on Election Day, normally we don't see a whole lot of incumbents go down to defeat. But once again, a different story this year.
Yeah, there was a net loss of 10 seats in the House for Republicans. So that takes them down. The Republicans now have a 111 – they have a majority of 111 in the House. And then in the Senate, they're down to 29 from their historic high. I think it was actually 34. So they're down from 34 to 29. They lost 5 seats. What – honestly, when we take a look at the results of the election – what we see is this: the seats that were lost were largely a continuation of a trend. Those seats had been trending more and more Democrat in terms of turnout and voter registration for the last few election cycles. So all of the Democratic excitement and I guess lack of excitement among Republicans in the Southeast really just kind of was the nail in the coffin to push a lot of these seats into the Democrats.
And when we talk about the Southeast, for those who may not be familiar, we're talking about the counties outside of the city of Philadelphia, specifically Bucks, Montgomery, Delaware, and Chester counties. And that's where we saw a blue wave, to the degree that there was any blue wave anywhere in the country this year. It certainly occurred in those four counties, particularly Chester, Montgomery, Delaware. And most of those seats, as a matter of fact, I believe all but one of the Senate seats lost was in that region.
Yeah, that's correct.
And the other one was?
In western Pennsylvania, in the Pittsburgh area. That was actually a seat where in the primary election, a candidate that our political action committee supported defeated a Republican incumbent. And that loss in the Allegheny County was really a self-inflicted wound by the Senate Republican Campaign Committee. The one thing that the Democrats seized on very effectively, the Democrats and their union allies seized on very effectively in going after Jeremy Schaefer, was a bogus complaint that the Senate Republican Campaign Committee filed with the Ethics Department in the primary election.
Well, you had that, and Republicans, unfortunately, are pretty good at self-inflicted wounds. Also, that district in Allegheny County where Jeremy Schaefer lost the election was in the same area as the Connor Lamb-Keith Rothfuss race.
It was, and it was also a district. It either went marginally – I'm pretty sure it went by just like a fraction of a point to Hillary Clinton. So this was a seat that was – it was going to be a top priority target. When we take a look at the record and qualifications of the incumbent Republican who are out there, we actually saw he voted for the largest gas tax increase in Pennsylvania's history, which is actually the gentleman who was the architect of that increase, Senator John Rafferty, from the southeastern part of the state, was also one of the Republicans who lost, and his Democratic opponents hammered him mercilessly on that vote.
Let's talk about House losses, state House seat losses. They too were concentrated in the Southeast. Chester County in particular was a bloodbath for Republicans. Any reason why so many losses in that area?
Well, if I look at Chester County, it was really the only county in the Southeast that still had a large concentration of Republican members. Mm-hmm. The other counties have, you know, one or two. So I think it was just more a function of that's where the Republican seats were to lose. So that's kind of where we saw it happen. And the Republicans down in Chester County have not been effective in countering the Democratic increase.
We are talking with Leo Knepper, who is the CEO of the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. Leo, a couple seconds on what the Citizens Alliance is and where folks can find you on the web.
The Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania is basically an accountability mechanism for the General Assembly. What we do is we take a look at legislation that's moving through. We try and keep people advised as to what the legislation looks like. And then through our political action committee, we are able to support candidates for the House and the Senate, including primary challengers. And that competition creates a situation for better policy in the future. And they can find us at www.empowerpa.org or just on Facebook, search for Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania.
Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. Leo, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Loman.
How many school districts are too many school districts? Pennsylvania has 500 of them. From time to time, talk of merger surfaces, but that rarely happens. Here to sort through the dynamics of school district mergers are Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Institute. Frank?
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm your host, Frank Gamrat, and with me today is Allegheny Institute Research Director Eric Montardi. The reason why we want to talk to you today is you've done some very interesting research on school district consolidation. Now, to be fair with our viewers, there aren't any districts in Pennsylvania that are actively pursuing consolidation that we know of, at least not on our side of the state. But the question comes up, and there was a study by EdBuild that looked at school consolidation. You know, how easy is it to do? What might be the stumbling blocks? When was the last time it was done here in the Commonwealth? Could you give us a little bit of the background as to school consolidation in Pennsylvania and what types of consolidation laws are on the books with other states?
I'd be happy to, Frank. So basically, most of the school consolidations, and I'm going to use that term just as the umbrella term for merger, consolidation, annexation. There may be other legal terms in other states, but most of the decrease in the number of school districts happened in the 1950s and 60s when the country moved toward more centralization of school districts, kind of got rid of a lot of the single schoolhouse districts that were set up. And so that's where you had a lot of the decrease in the number. As a matter of fact, it went from 81% from like around 1952 to 2012 based on the census of local governments, which counts the number of districts. And the same thing with Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Once upon a time, it had over 2,500 school districts, and now we're at 500 even. And that came about because there was a voluntary consolidation within the last decade here that you researched and did some work on. And really, you know, what this report looked at is, you know, it is a hard thing to do because there's a lot of arguments about why, you know, school districts shouldn't consolidate with one another. If there's voluntary ways to do it, sometimes the districts just don't go about it. Mm-hmm. There are states that provide incentives. Pennsylvania is one of them. But are they strong enough incentives to encourage districts to do it? And then it becomes an issue where, you know, if you have a district that's down on its luck financially or academically, that's when they're looking to partner right. with someone. And that's the time when the other districts are there, you know, either adjacent to them or somewhere nearby where they say, you know, we don't want to merge mm-hmm. or consolidate with the district because we don't want to take on right. their financial or academic problems.
Well, that's just it. You know, if you're looking to voluntarily have consolidations between school districts, a school district that wants to consolidate or merge because they need a lifeline financially, it's going to scare people away. It's going to scare other districts away because you don't want to assume their debt. You don't want to assume their financial troubles. And so you have some districts that are out there looking, but they don't have any dance partners, so to speak. We had two districts here in Pittsburgh, the Duquesne School District and the Wilkinsburg School District, that were desperately looking to consolidate, and they were unable to do so, but the state came in and offered a different solution. And you know, you did a little work on Duquesne and Wilkinsburg. You know, what was the solution crafted by the state for them?
Basically, in Duquesne's case, it was just closing down part of the educational program. So Duquesne is still a school district. It's in something called financial recovery, which means it's been under state oversight for a long time. But the state basically just told the district that it's high school first and then junior high. So now both of them are middle school, pardon me, probably is the more appropriate term. They're just forced to go to, you know, two other districts right. in Allegheny County. Wilkinsburg, they got some incentive money from the state to kind of help with something, but they kind of took it on their own to look for another district to say, we can't offer the programs that we want to here. Again, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, Wilkinsburg is a very high-spending district right next to the city of Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh Public Schools, but it went to a couple other districts first. And again, same thing. Everybody said, you know, we're kind of happy where we are. Right. We're not looking to take on, you know, another district students. And they just came up with this voluntary arrangement. So again, now you have two districts in Allegheny County that are basically just K through six or K through five districts, and then the classes above those go to other districts mm-hmm. somewhere else in the county.
Well, it's also worth noting that the Duquesne issue was contentious in so much that the two neighboring districts, West Mifflin and East Allegheny, really wanted no parts of this. And what ended up happening was some of the kids went to East Allegheny, some of the kids went to West Mifflin, And for a couple years afterwards, both of those school districts were complaining that they weren't getting the proper payments from the state to take on those new students. So it's a very contentious issue. You did mention that it's voluntary here in Pennsylvania. Do other states have it where it's mandatory? They're mandatory incentives to merging.
Yeah, there's one state, and that's South Carolina, that's based off of this Ed Boat study where they only have mandatory consolidation. And again, there has to be something going on with the district, either enrollment level, academic performance, financial, maybe financial distress may be the term. Some state level official, either the Secretary of Education or the State Board of Education, can mandate a consolidation. Then you have about eight states that are a mixture of both, that the districts are free to go ahead and voluntarily consolidate if they want to, if they can find the dance partner, as you mentioned, and team up and make a new district. But then there's also mandatory language in there as well. And then you're left with the remainder of the states, which are purely voluntary. Mm-hmm. That's where Pennsylvania is. That's where Ohio is, where it basically is left to the districts to say, we want to have a consolidation. They may turn to the state and say, give us some guidance, because obviously in state law right now in Pennsylvania, there is some involvement. You have the school boards that say, we want to do this. They both have to vote on it. Then it goes up to the State Board of Education. They review it, and then they either give the blessing or they say, no, there's something wrong. Here's what we would recommend you fix, and then something changes and may go forward from there. There's other states where you have voter involvement. Pennsylvania has no voter involvement. It doesn't go back to the districts for the district residents to decide, do they want to consolidate or not. This is just school board involvement. So you do have a mixture there. Again, the study doesn't give you a lot of detail on how much has happened where. Again, as we said at the beginning, most of the consolidation activity in the country happened 5-6 decades ago. In the last 25 years or so, it's been much slower pace. So there may be states that they might say, well, we're purely voluntary, but at some point they may just pass a law that says we're going to mandate the number of districts shrink, and this is how you have to do it. You may have to get to a certain enrollment level. You may have provisions for geographic and maybe the school buildings that exist, but that's basically how you split up the states at this point.
Right. Well, we only had one district merger recently in the last 10 years, and that was Central Valley. It was the merger between the Monaca and Center District in Beaver County. And there are, as your research noted, some issues that have to be worked out. Something as simple as pay scales. What happens when one district has a higher pay scale than another district? How do you work that out? Work rules, union, pensions. I mean, there's a lot of things that can really jump in the way of a consolidation, even from the taxing side. What about differing rates for communities and different debt levels? Again, we need to stress that there aren't any movements out there to change the law in Pennsylvania, but it was something that had come up that was worth the look, really, and your research did a nice job of that. I would like to thank Eric for joining me today. I would also like to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about this or any of our other topics, please visit our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org, or you can also follow us on Twitter. Thank you for listening.
Americans for Prosperity has put together a scorecard so residents of Penns Woods can see how their representatives in Harrisburg vote on issues that would foster the creation of more and better jobs in the Commonwealth. Beth Ann Mumford has details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
It's no secret that Pennsylvania's taxpayers face growing fiscal liabilities. This is not because taxes are too low. It's because our politicians spend too much. Too often, our tax code kills jobs, harms small businesses, and threatens the prosperity of current and future generations. We must reduce the tax burden on Pennsylvania's small businesses and working families, make the tax code flatter and fairer, and eliminate special carve-outs, loopholes, and giveaways that funnel benefits to a handful of politically connected industries and companies at the expense of hardworking taxpayers. Common sense reforms and spending reductions aren't an easy sell in Harrisburg. Helped by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, lawmakers were able to send a balanced budget to the governor in 2018 while putting off hard decisions for later. Don't worry, they continue to dole out massive tax breaks for connected Hollywood executives and horse race owners, and a few new faces too. To the tune of $800 million a year, Pennsylvania taxpayers fund corporate welfare while lawmakers find new ways to tax our families, small businesses, innovators, and entrepreneurs. It's no surprise, then, that PA does not land on the top of any list ranking states for economic opportunity or growth. And with Governor Wolf leading our state, you should remember to hold on to your checkbook because they're coming for more of your dollars. Government at all levels is too expensive. Reckless government spending is problematic because every dollar government spends is removed from the productive private economy. Moreover, excessive debt and high taxes slow economic growth and put future generations at risk. A government of the people, by the people, and for the people owes it to her citizens to spend wisely, remembering that government dollars are actually citizen dollars. Controlling government spending is key to unleashing the private sector's ability to lift people from poverty, strengthen the middle class, and create prosperity and well-being for every member of our Commonwealth. That's why we're taking time to recognize the economic freedom champions in Harrisburg who know that the path to prosperity for Pennsylvania is a robust economy that will only happen when taxpayers are freed from crushing taxes, regulations, and status quo government. These are the taxpayer champions, the torchbearers who make the difficult decisions in the halls of our Capitol. Last month, Pennsylvania recognized members of the Pennsylvania House and Senate for voting against overspending and in support of measures such as increasing worker freedom, lowering barriers to opportunity, and working to stop the overspending and other bad ideas that plague Harrisburg. The lawmakers we recognized at a press event in the Capitol have chosen to vote with taxpayers rather than special interests. Our A-plus lawmakers have set the gold standard for voting to cut wasteful spending, lower the tax burden, implement meaningful regulatory reform, increase worker freedom, and put Pennsylvanians in charge of Pennsylvania's future. All have taken votes that have objectively lowered the tax burden and given Pennsylvanians greater freedom to work, increase their standard of living, and save more of their hard-earned money. We hope these lawmakers stay the course and encourage other Pennsylvania lawmakers to follow their lead next year. Find out how your lawmaker voted at www.pataxpayerscorecard.com. In 2018, our volunteers and staff made more than 500,000 phone calls to Pennsylvania citizens talking about the important reforms Harrisburg could make to lower barriers to opportunity and create a Pennsylvania where every citizen has the maximum opportunity to thrive. Join us in the coming months as we talk to citizens about how to cut spending, lower taxes, and advance a budget that doesn't break the bank by signing up at www.iamafp.org. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity. Find us on the web at www.afppennsylvania.com.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHHS-FM in Havertown, WCCS-AM, and WLCY-AM in Indiana, along with WFYL-AM in Jeffersonville, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
We'll be right back.